Chapter 6 For the Children. Yesterday was October 7, 2019. Extinction Rebellion began for 2 weeks, calling on people everywhere to stand up, to disrupt, to shut down centers of power until governments act on climate change. We are still here on this small Greek island of Sifnos, beginning the day by joining the Defend the Sacred Alliance in a prayer over Zoom. I know well the power of disruption from Gandhi to the civil rights movement, and I'm willing to be arrested again in my life. Once I face any fear, any unwillingness to sacrifice, any attachment to my own comforts, then I listen again where to be and what is mine to do. For now, it is to listen to the young ones, to listen to my elders, to listen to the indigenous, First Nations, peaceful cultures, activists, leaders. To listen, to stand and walk and be with them in solidarity, the women, the LGBTQ, the POC, people of color and culture, are better now named people of the global majority, the ones most affected by the abuse of power. This is the movement. This is the time. This is the work. I made my way slowly into the day, curious what would emerge. I often say to my few mentees that there is love, truth, injustice, opportunity to witness, to show up anywhere really, to learn without any workshop, training, or even a ceremony. To be part of making a difference anywhere and everywhere, just walk out the front door. And so it was in this day, as we found ourselves drawn into a conversation with a young man, Constantine, 28. There he was, behind the cash register, in the only little market open. No one was in the store except us, most tourists long gone. The first rains had started. It was as if the plants, trees, flowers, and soil were responding with visible delight. After a few small Kalamata exchanges filled with smiles, one thing just led to another. Within minutes, we were talking about telling the truth, being real, saying no, responding to violence in his life and work as a DJ and security guard. By the end, we were exchanging emails, resources, and much more than a few euros for our lemon and eggs. It may sound insignificant in the bigger movement of ecosystems, yet this one-on-one contact was for us part of the intergenerational relations embodied. He was genuinely impacted and resourced to continue his dream, which was hard work in the culture he was in. His dream of a peaceful, just, awake culture when he returned to the heart of Athens. For us, our circle was alive and widened, another healthier cell in the whole body. Later in the day, we returned to our room to find a box of cookies with a bow attached. No note, but we knew it was from our hosts, Anna Maria and Giannis. It was their way of saying thank you for the day before. Gifting economy. Giannis had seen two more guests leave because of his brother next door. Remember the loud one, Maurizio. He could not help himself or keep himself from shouting whenever he spoke. Greek neighbors, we learned, were as upset as the tourists. When not attempting to lure in clients to his four-table restaurant, we discovered there were a lot of fuck yous towards his wife. Giannis translated for us. Giannis shared with me his situation seemed impossible. His brother would not listen to him or to any of the neighbors. The only ones who potentially, he said, had the power to do anything were the guests, and they just came and went, sometimes faster than usual because of Mauricio. They were seeking holiday, peace, rest, relaxation. And they did not want to get involved. I told Giannis, well, I was a guest, a foreigner, and didn't want to offend anyone. After all, it was Mauricio's home and restaurant. Yes, Anne, Giannis said. He is negatively affecting us all. Here again, another small local situation. And here again, I was asking what to do with the power that we have. I told Giannis that I was willing to speak with him. Oh my God, did I really say that? I need not share the details so much more, but I should say that I had to muster up some chi and find just the right moment. Mauricio had a formidable, if not frightening, way about him. The bottom line, it was worth it on many levels. Meeting him, seeing him, and asking him for something needed. I can only say it was in some ways, though a tiny action in the face of violence, locally probably, as well as worldwide. For me, it was more challenging, actually, than marching as I have in a protest. One-on-one with the so-called offender. The impact? Who knows, really? It has been somewhat quieter, though, for the past 24 hours. And Giannis, he's exceptionally grateful. Acknowledging my way with people he feels, he says, is a gift from the gods. Well, yes, most likely, I get to say. If I have served at all, it is simply because of the power of prayer, simple presence. I woke today remembering the first time I showed my passport to the guard at Visa Control at the entry to the USSR. Even though I knew I had permission from both governments to go, to pass, I also knew and lived the fear of nuclear war between our countries, something that was in the news then weekly. I felt my smallness, one citizen in some kind of heart exchange. One person that could disappear behind the Iron Curtain so easily. One American woman who had the audacity to think I could be part of stimulating, if not making perhaps a few more healthy cells. I remember looking the border guard in the eyes and smiling, attempting to slow my breathing down. Giannis said, I have such a calming effect. And yet at times, to be honest, my heart is, like this time, racing inside. The guard asked sternly why I was coming. Communications coordinator was listed as my occupation. It was the most honest, acceptable, translatable thing I felt I could write. For me, it meant international, interpersonal, and of course, interspecies communications. For him, it's simply translated as part of a team bringing U.S. citizens to meet with Soviet leaders, healers, writers, veterinarians on this trip, and Arabian horse owners. Linda Tillington Jones, renowned trainer and healer for horses and animals, including humans, had been drafted by U.S. citizen diplomacy leader Jim Hickman to be an exchange ambassador, to be part of restoring heart-to-heart relations through the common bond with animals, particularly horses, particularly Arabians, at the largest gathering of such in Kiev. Linda had drafted me, and three of us spent the next 3 weeks at the shows, at the circus, and with the vets for Olympic equestrians, as well as meeting farmers with their steeds alongside the country roads. The latter was, of course, more rare an occurrence, as we were required to be accompanied by the KGB everywhere we went. I had loved Linda and her work since we had first met so many years before. Soon, our first night in Kiev, I fell in love with Jim and everyone else we met thereafter. There's nothing like a love field to find home in the middle of a cold war. Linda's way and work always catalyzed the best of relations, as disgruntled horses went from power over beings, seemingly filled with and instilling fear simultaneously, to become more gentle companions after her magic touch. That tea touch she offered got everyone involved in looking at the power of communicating in new ways. Not a lot more needed to be said. As the doors and hearts opened, we found ourselves meeting after meeting with government officials as well as government resistors. Those kinds of meetings with journalists, for example, working on avenues of free expression, we met in less public places, in more discreet hours, in fields more like the ones I had read about or even imagined after watching espionage films. I remember one evening where we stayed in such courageous company, talking and drinking vodka, as was most often the way, until the wee hours in the morning. Jim waited till those wee hours and told Linda and I at some point, probably around 3 a.m., that there was no way home but to walk. We would be noticed in any kind of public transport and raise attention and unhealthy suspicions. I was learning some of these realities slowly, tracking Jim and his ways of moving throughout the days. He was on his 10th trip, I believe, by that time, and I could only feel innocent, naive, but at best respectful. That night, walking back maybe 3 or 4 miles to our hotel on snowy sidewalks in a pair of cotton Chinese shoes, believe me, I did not quickly forget. It was 10 degrees below zero, and though a challenge on unexpected levels, I could not see it as but a small sacrifice for the prayer we were carrying of system change. My greatest gift received in those first weeks of many trips to follow was meeting Igor Charkovsky, leader of the underground water birth movement there. Women for years had been subject to secret abortions as the only form of birth control, as well as hospital births that were a far cry from anything natural or guided by female wisdom. The impact of what occurs at birth lasts in most humans for a lifetime. As said earlier, it was working with Stan Grof that I was able to relive and release some of my own trauma. And it was being with Igor, mothers, midwives, and especially the water babies over those weeks that I connected with the true blessing of birth possible for mom and baby. Not only was the labor in water so natural for many moms, it seemed a win-win for the babies as well. Igor and I most days had a most wonderful translator, Andrei Orlov. See the image he gifted me? It came out of a dream at the trip's end. He had never drawn anything before. Other days, we walked together holding hands. We communicated easily by watching, witnessing, nodding, doing. In one apartment, there was an enormous tank of water, 6 feet by 6 feet, and many moms and babies gathered around. Igor would throw coins into the bottom of the tank, and 1 2-year-old, Koala, would dive down without any fear at all, swim around a far longer time underwater than average, and collect all the coins and surface with a big grin. I was sure he was part dolphin. It was the training that came after birth that was the catalyst for this kind of activity. A bit threatening to most Westerners, Igor worked with these babies underwater, carrying them through their tears and reactions until they calmed and found enough breath. We spent one Saturday out on the Moscow River, cutting a circular hole in the ice and dunking Koala and others in. It was an old Siberian approach to strengthening the immune system. It seemed to work. And although I did not test it myself that day, just to say, I have many times since. Over the years, Igor and his ways went from underground to being of great interest to Soviet leaders, particularly in the arena of sports and the Olympics. These young ones developed both their psychic and physical capacities beyond average. Quite exceptional little humans were emerging. Anything in the realm of superpowers brought interest to the Soviet Union. Criticism as well as appreciation. How Americans and other countries followed up on water birth and such early childhood training in water is another much longer story. Why I share the bit I have here is to return to this exploration of power, water, and healing. Specifically, what does open when there is freedom from fear? What I witnessed in Koala is something I would wish for every child. What I witnessed in myself and so many others when we moved beyond our fear of Russia, Russians, KGB, even nuclear war, was heartening and healing. Did it lead to system change? Well, yes, I do believe that Track 2 diplomacy contributed to an opening between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. A major disruption of that system emerged over subsequent years. Did that, has that, led to a more peaceful culture or more beautiful world? Certainly for some, not for others, I would suspect. And it is something humbling and informative to live long enough to see Putin in power after a Gorbachev, to see Trump in power after an Obama. I think again of the dolphins released into the wild. Quote, "Free at last," was the headlines in the local newspaper. And now, that home that they were freed into is more polluted and toxic than the cement pool, perhaps, that they were in. Impermanence. What seemed the right thing to do in one decade may well not hold up in another. And yet I can say no regrets, because somehow the heart path seems right no matter what. What I know is it's not enough to say no to what is unjust. It's not enough to disrupt the government or the powers that be. It's not enough, as Roger Hallam leading the Extinction Rebellion encourages, to do it for our own redemption. It's not enough for us all to sit in the highway and stop traffic because it's an adventure or it's better than staying at home. It is something for sure to cross that threshold, to face the fear of arrest, if not violence. It is action I have been part of and support today. And I listen for what more than the resistance I feel is needed. How will we be different? How will we be with power, with water, the refugees, once the system, the corporate union, if not the Soviet Union, has come apart? This is the question continuing to guide my prayer and action. There is no vacation from living counsel. There is not a day off from bearing witness, and there is no holiday from the war. There is no time it's okay to close my heart and mind to what is needed. But when? When to stop and do nothing? Yes, sometimes for me, ideally, if I'm awake, it's to stop when my actions come out of fear or anger, when there is more likely chance that they will perpetuate violence to myself or others. That's the time to step back, to stop, to listen, to breathe, to ask again what will serve the change needed. To do this while we can, with recognition that such is not possible when in a war zone. Not now for those on the front line, and probably less for any of us in the days to come. Otherwise, I say yes to restoration, yes to taking care of ourselves as well as others, yes to days and lives of wholeness, yes to play, laughter, and beauty, for if that's not a part of it, what are we doing it for? And yes, to rest. On this Greek island, I seek to reclaim the best roots of democracy, to revisit the best ways and hear the prayers of my ancestors, to resource through the stars and their light. Western civilization. I listen for what is here to carry forward. The good, the true, the beautiful, that many say were the founding principles here. Commitment to love, to nature, to beauty, to health, to art, to reverence, to respect, to water. I sit at the feet of the oldest roots of the olive trees. For now, that is just enough. I hear older people often who have been on the front lines in many ways throughout their lives say, "Now I'm stepping back." This phrase always catches me a bit. Not that I don't want to see the young ones leading. It is more a feeling that we are all needed and that we need each other. Kind of a all hands on deck call. The words step aside maybe work better for me, or step up in new ways, willingness to show up in whatever way may best serve the intent. Follow behind, walk beside, sit as witness. Whatever is asked, not only by the leaders, but perhaps even more by the situation. I have often said situations have been my best teachers. And as I continue with that today, I most often receive clear messages of what is mine to do. I almost feel like saying I was just on this big walk on the Trail of Tears, and the best thing on the only thing that came to me to do was to offer the guy telling a story, when his throat started to crack like mine, to be there to offer him a lemonade. He was so happy. If something needs to be said, I check out with whom it is likely to be heard. Not only who needs to say it, which of course is important as well. The four breath practice helps a lot. And those simple counsel questions. Does it serve the intention? Does it serve me to share, others to hear? Does it serve, as best I know, divine spirit, a more beautiful, just world? It's impossible for me to not see circles and spirals in life. What this means is everyone has their part, their voice, their gift, their shadow, and more. We need the Extinction Rebellion right now. We need Fridays for the future. More and more everyday citizens waking up and willing to risk comfort, prison, life. And we need, I do believe, the monks continuing their prayers for peace, the Dalai Lama, the indigenous grandmothers, as well as the old, as well as emerging watering holes, the dreaming, the seeding, in the best cases, the modeling possibilities for a future. The Tamaras, the Oravilles, the black organic farms, the urban hubs, the all nations gathering at Pine Ridge, the Kogi, the Sea People. One of my as of yet unmanifested dreams is to make maps, visual images of the old and the new pilgrimage trails, places and projects that are continuing in a revival of circle council ways, ceremonies that are being held, prayers that are continuing, cultures that are remembering, reinvigorating or birthing new rites of passage for young people to find their calling, their purpose, their part in it all, to take their seats fully in every village, seen and respected. No longer driven to individuate 24/7 through drugs or gangs or needing status-type jobs and inflated identities to feel power. No longer struggling to be seen by creating more and more stuff, making more and more money, or the numerous other ways uninitiated adults today too often turn to prove themselves through the biggest wallet, house, weapon, or even charity. These maps of watering holes, centers that care for our earth, for all of nature at the core, would make a most beautiful earth sky art. Instead of seeing the latest techno technique showing wind and hurricanes in four colors, we might have a vision of the sacred attempting to manifest through human prayer and action. There are already some good news networks out there, thank God. Thank the funders and the founders these days, working to offset the onslaught of the dramatic 24/7 focus on war and violence. And still, in service to wholeness, I feel we could use just a few more positive images to wake up to dream with. Not many words would even be needed. Without such, how does the greater capability of Homo sapiens emerge? Imagination, pictures, music. We know the power of art influencing culture. And here in Greece, I am deeply and passionately reminded of such again. What does it take? What will it take to truly imagine, and thereby manifest the more beautiful world we want to live in. Of course, we face the issue that the 1%, the Koch brothers, as well as the boombox babies, may not fully care about the birds and the bees, the flowers and the trees, not to mention the refugees. What to say to that? Given time, given heart, given healing of trauma, given art, given intentions, ceremony, given attention, given reparations, given counsel, rites of passage, given resources of a different kind, in time, with time, I feel all could or even would care. The best of human nature, more of it, that which has been oppressed, stressed, repressed, rejected, would, given time, emerge. How much time? I can't say. How many generations to heal? I don't know. I simply head in such a direction, as Thich Nhat Hanh used to teach, towards the North Star. In a medicine wheel way, towards a true north, where power comes through a healthy, whole adult and is not power taken, stolen, or inherited through force, money, class, status, race, color of skin. Has this kind of peaceful culture ever existed before? Many say yes. Will it again? Heraclitus says we can't step into the same river twice. Nothing is ever the same. I step in, curious what can and will be. I did not have children, not only because I did not find the right mate. I actually was not ready in time. I was not ready in my heart, mind, whole enough to take on such a creation. Not yet healed from my own childhood wounds, not yet convinced I could become more than a complaining, resentful parent without the village to share the care. I worked for years then, as I do today, to create the village, to raise the children, to hospice the ill, the elders, to initiate the young. By the time I was at that birth-giving threshold, such a field or village did not exist that I could find, nor partners who shared the dream. Simultaneously, I knew having more children, all women just giving birth, was not the best picture for our world. More and more were voicing concern around population, carbon footprints, and that for sure had its influence on me. There was the reality of so many children without care, without shelter, without food. Who was I, in my privilege, to move ahead without that being considered? I needed further inquiry into what was my role, my soul's purpose in being here. Could I stop long enough to ask that question and not simply take up the woman's mantle that my New England Catholic culture was offering, if not demanding? In those years, 60s, 70s, and 80s, I sat in a lot of women's circles. I marched with women through the streets of Mexico City as a delegate for the first International Women's Conference. Much of my feminist activity I've touched earlier, yet not much about the part of what this choice, this experienced destiny to not have my own child was like. I must say, even in the most progressive women's circles then and still now, 90% of the time the theme emerges. So often spoken, quote, having a child is the most creative powerful path anyone can choose. End quote. In many cultures, it is seen truly as essential. The very identity of woman is mother, and without a child, woman is less than. There will never be known love fully unless a child is birthed, is another quote. There is no experience more beautiful. It is the gateway to completion, evolution, even enlightenment. I could go on. And even if these aren't the exact words being spoken, it's rare that this message is not present. Where does that leave me? Where does it leave so many? It's not a question I dwell on or even have a cause or crusade around or even a charge. I guess I take it in on some level, a bit sadly, as another place of hierarchical ranking. It simply nudges me further to know and give attention to the circle and trust my part in the whole. I must have faith in that, in the knowings that come, whether from the stars, the water, the dolphins and whales, my ancestors. I sense I've been guided. My actions have been guided. Whether they come out of wounds or out of love, out of culture or beyond boundaries, out of body, heart, spirit, mind, all or any of the above, these knowings simply make me who I am. They have led me to who I have become and who I am becoming. Without my very own children, seeing all and any children as family was a given. Those feelings leading to a life of local and global community easily followed. Much less carbon footprint, and at the same time, much more airplane travel than most moms.